This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. It feels like I've been away forever.
Yes, welcome back, Richard. Welcome back.
I think it was 10 days I had off in total.
Wow.
Thank you, thank you, Malaysia, for all your lovely, wonderful holidays. And, of course, to all of the athletes for getting all of those wonderful gold medals.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the Prime Minister for giving us an extra day off. It's so very generous.
You had longer than what we had, than me and Arvin had.
Well, you know.
Went for a holiday, Rich?
No, actually, I didn't go anywhere.
Ah.
I sat by the pool, and I sat by my TV. On my sofa now has an indentation.
It's a holiday at home.
It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday. Anyway, of course, in the studio with me is Jeff Sando over here and Arvin Yuvaraj. We've got some stories we're going to give to you throughout the afternoon up until 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking off with a story, though, about the damaged undersea cables. For some of you at home, you might be wondering why your internet is a little bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
Arvin could possibly have the answer for you.
Mm. Yeah, so basically if you're having like a slow internet connection, this is like a super quick story. It just came out yesterday, I think. I thought it was important to update.
A lot of people are questioning on Facebook, like, you're experiencing a bit of a downtime with your internet connection, mm-hmm. and you go like,
it's never anything new though for us here, is it?
So yeah, if you're having like a slow connection, it's basically because there are like damaged undersea cables because of strong typhoons around like Hong Kong.
No sharks then?
No sharks.
This time, not. Yeah.
This is completely God in the weather. So the damaged cables are... These are basically cables that connect Southeast Asia to the US. The damaged cables are ASE. ASE is the Asia Submarine Cable Express. There's Asia American Gateway, which is AAG. TGA Intra-Asia. And then there's SEAMEWE3. So a lot
of
code
words. Heck is that?
It just says SMW3.
Is he just babbling on in his own little language over there?
The full name for this cable...
He speaks quantum language. By the way, now, Rich, in the 10 days that you were not on air, he has gone through all the quantum computing and quantum teleportation, and I'm sure this Thursday he has a quantum story again. He's just talking quantum language.
Have you been brain hacking while I've been away?
Yeah, my mind is kind of like opened up to like new languages and stuff.
Okay.
So, it's a halo around him.
Yeah,
but, something around him.
Yeah, but unlike my mind, the internet is quite slow, and it'll take about 6 weeks to be fixed. These submarine cables are difficult to fix basically because it's dependent on if ships are available, weather conditions, and permits as well.
The weather has been really bad. Yeah,
it's been really bad. The ASE cable is 7,200 km underwater. 7,200 km of cable alone under the sea. It's jointly owned by TM, Telecom Malaysia, Singapore's StarHub, Japan's NTT, and Philippines' PLDT.
Mm-hmm.
So TM tweeted out that they were aware of the problem and they are working on it. And then PLDT also tweeted that users may experience slowdowns, especially during the peak hours, but they've tried to like reroute traffic so that we don't feel it as much.
Yeah, so a lot of people, when these things happen, you would face a slight slowdown on your internet connections, especially you're accessing sites to the US because these are the cables that are connecting Southeast Asia to the United States. So just try to, I can't say try not to go onto the US sites because most of them will be from the US. Right, so just I guess bear with it for a while. And
mine's not been so bad the last few days.
It could be because you are just connected to a different network itself, on a different server, on different cables. If you're really struggling with your internet connection, just do a reset. Switch off your modem and your router for 15 seconds, and then switch it back on again. Hopefully, you would have been, switched onto a different connection at then. You've got a different IP address.
A public service announcement by Telecom Jeff.
There you go.
Right, okay. Bumble. Have you heard of Bumble?
Yeah.
I mentioned it briefly in a story a while ago, right?
So
Bumble is a dating app that forces women to make the first move. So in that way, they don't get hassled by men. They can basically choose whether or not they like somebody.
So it's a women-centric dating, online dating app. It's more safer for women.
Correct.
Though, because women make the first move.
Exactly. So, it's mainly a smartphone app available for,
Bumble,
stay away from it, Jeff. but the reason I'm talking about this is because they turned down an offer of acquisition by Match Group. Group. They're the people who own Tinder, they own OkCupid, and they own Match.com.
Aha.
They offered $450 million.
Whoa.
And
how old is this Bumble?
It's not very old. And this girl, one of the co-founders, her name is Whitney Wolf. She actually worked for Tinder a while ago, and she left in 2012 because she filed a sexual harassment suit against the company. She later settled out of court, made herself a bit of money, mm-hmm. decided that she liked the dating app idea and went ahead and created her own. And of course, now it's in that position where a whole bunch of people are realizing how successful it is, and they want to own a piece of it. And she's saying, no, it's mine, it's ours. We don't want to make any changes. And of course, companies like Tinder and whatever, they want to come in and make these swift changes because they know how their business works, and they want to make this other one very similar.
It's affecting their business, I guess. That's
it
why,
must, you know, well, yeah, be affecting their business.
Probably. It's because $450 million. I just did a quick search. Bumble is about 3 years old.
Right.
2 months ago. And 3 year old company, for someone to offer you $450 million as an acquisition, you say no. That says a lot. I admire her character to resist that kind of money, but I can also see why. It's because she was, you know, she was the co-founder of Tinder, right?
And she was, yeah.
And, you know, I guess she just hates, you know, just the sight of the company or the name of the company.
The other guy that's that was the co-founder of Bumble is this guy called Andrey Andreev, and he was the co-founder of Badoo. And Badoo is another one. If you've been around in the dating world any point, they had a website a few years ago, and, you know, they've got an awful lot of users. He kind of jumped out of that. Got on board with this woman, and they found a Bumble. And it's funny because I was watching a documentary a couple of weeks ago about some guy who was living his life via Tinder and Badoo and Bumble and one thing or another. Mm-hmm. And he kept referring to Bumble, Bumble, Bumble. I'm like, what the heck is Bumble? Mm. And then this news story came up, and I read a bit more about it.
I'm just interested to see how, you know, these online dating apps and you know, services, how successful they are,
right.
How in terms of the business side, because it all comes down again to, you know, you got to make sure that you pair the people rightly, right? That is the end game, right?
Yeah.
That is when they have, yes, we are successful. Like Google will only be successful if you search for something and they show what you're searching for. Same case with Bumble or Tinder or Match or anything, right? It has to reach where you find, you match your customers with the right partner.
Right.
And they, you know, hopefully get married and they live happily ever after.
I think the idea, carry on.
The thing with this though, like, what is their percentage though? Like, even with Tinder or even with Bumble, I don't see this being like, you know, this is the next big thing. I remember listening to Startup Podcast Season 2 by Gimlet Media, and they followed the dating ring. Mm. They won Y Combinator, whole lot of money, and they were struggling to just match people because it's just hard. People are just really hard. Mm. If you're matching AI against AI, oh God, that's super easy. But Arvin and Quantum, you know, that's matchmaking heaven. But, you know, you can't match two individuals who are very different, right, and just, you know, give selected questions. It's really hard, and I would love to see what Bumble has. It's just that not interested.
I mean, a couple of things kind of spring to mind. You know, if you've been offered $450 million and you say no, then clearly they've got something up their sleeve, and they
or you just hate the company
or you
that's
just
offering.
Hate the company.
You know, if Google were to offer Bumble $450 million, would they have taken it? I think it could be a different question altogether.
Could possibly,
right? Yeah. So
but
I guess
to go back to what you were saying about, you know, what do they have to offer and how difficult it is and whatever. Mm-hmm. I think the idea behind Tinder, I mean, let's be honest, Tinder isn't about meeting that person you're going to look at.
No, not so much.
I assume. No. Bumble, I think, has a different approach. You know, they genuinely...
Women first.
They want to make it something special, from what I understand.
Well,
Let us know.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who would require services like this to, you know, kickstart, you know, your life, right, of your social life. And, and it'll be nice to see things like this work because, you know, if people get too busy with their work these days and you don't go out
that
so often
it.
And, you know, they spend 10 days of holiday at home in your bed and they sit on the sofa or by the pool and then there's an indent in the sofa, apparently. You know, it's good to see companies like this helping those people. Yeah.
In a minute. I'm glad we're going to a break.
Yep.
Anyway, folks, if you are a user of Bumble or, in fact, Tinder, let us know some of your experiences. Keep them safe for work, of course. Do get us via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. Or you can get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, Jeff will be talking to us about how China have come down hard and heavy on the ICO, the initial coin offering.
Everyone has got ICO?
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
More info about that. And of course, from Bumble, we're going to go in to the Kings of Leon. This is Sex on Fire, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Boyish 40-something millionaires, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Jeff Sandhu,
Arvind Yuvaraj,
Mr. Quantum over here.
Yeah,
right. So, Jeff, we've been speaking quite at length on cryptocurrencies and ICOs and one thing or another over the past few weeks.
Yeah. So some people might be a bit confused when we mention ICO or ICO. Mm. So it's for initial coin offering. It's a term that was, I think, for me, came to me earlier this year when cryptocurrency was starting to boom a lot. So I'll just explain a bit about what ICO is, because China's central bank has banned ICOs and South Korea is following suit as well. This is quite a shocker for the cryptocurrency world. Just before we do go into a lot of, you know, what is ICO and the cryptocurrency, me and you, Rich, we both have investments in Bitcoins,
indeed,
in Ethereums and a few other stuff as well. So again, this is by all means not sort of like a validation of, you know, what is going to happen. This is just a story on, it's very interesting to see how governments are dealing with things like cryptocurrency. So, initial coin offering is a form of like a crowdsourced fundraising that uses cryptocurrencies, also known as digital currencies or virtual currencies. So, these cryptocurrencies, they work as a medium of exchange using encryption to secure transactions or for creating, known as mining, additional units. Mm-hmm. So cryptocurrencies, the best of which is Bitcoin, they use distributed ledgers known as blockchains to track the transactions. Now, there are hundreds of them in existence as the currency's independence make them very attractive to some users. So cryptocurrencies can be designed to be widely used, as with Bitcoin, to operate within an online network like Ethereum network that uses Ether to make payments. So when a new cryptocurrency is launched, the creators, as which of with any other projects, they will need funds to make this work. So ICOs have evolved to fill these needs. So initial public offerings or IPOs, back then companies would sell back then. It's just, you know, so people still do it these days, right?
Of course they do.
Yeah. So IPOs, so companies for IPOs, they sell their equity in the form of shares for cash.
Yes.
Rules that govern IPOs usually require the company selling the equity to backed by tangible assets. So ICOs, however, the companies exchange their newly created cryptocurrencies called tokens for payments in an existing currency, which can only be old-fashioned cash or established cryptocurrencies, often mostly use Bitcoin or Ethereum. So ICOs investors profit when their tokens gain in value at a faster rate than the currency they used to pay them for. That's where you see this whole boom that's happened, right? Bitcoin raised like nearly 200%, 300%, same with Ethereum as well over the last like four or five months. Mm. So with that though, your $1 has you know, gone really far up the cryptocurrency world because of this boom, because of this token that you get, right? So ICOs are really successful because the first ICO that was held in the cryptocurrency world was in April 2014. It's called the Karma coin. Ethereum, they sold 18 million units of Ether in July to August of 2014 when they were valued at less than just $1.
Don't talk to me about that, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Now they're about hovering at about $350.
Right now, I think it's $283.
Yeah, so slightly dipped now. So as of June this year, Ether was nearly $400. So it's not always the case that historically ICOs have been unregulated and offered an opportunity for these exploits for people to make the quick buck. As many as 65 ICOs transactions were completed in China for the first 7 months of 2017, raising a combined 2.6 billion yuan, which is $398 million, according to the Beijing Internet Finance Association. So with this though, they have now hit a ban on this. So on Monday, China has banned and deemed illegal practice of raising funds through the launches of token-based ICOs, digital currencies. Individuals and organizations that have completed ICO fundraising should make arrangements to return the funds, said a joint statement from the People's Bank of China. The securities and banking regulators and other government departments that was posted on the central bank website also followed. So in total, $2.32 billion have been raised through ICOs, with $2.16 billion of that being raised since the start of 2017, according to a Crypto Compare. Ethereum definitely took the biggest hit in this. They've dropped nearly 20% since the start of the day.
Yeah, I know. I was sat there yesterday and I was like, what the heck is happening to my Ether?
Bitcoin has also been down for about 8%. South Korea are following suit. They are reportedly strengthening their regulation and monitoring digital currencies, including Bitcoin. They are saying that, you know, they are looking at ways to just handle ICOs. And the reason why they're doing this is just, you know, ICOs or cryptocurrencies is very volatile at this point of time. And it's really hard to put a proper law in this because of its wide use of, you know, cryptocurrency, right? The SEC, they warned that, you know, some tokens ICO, they skirt around current regulations for security sales, like using words like donation or crowd sale. Mm-hmm. In reality, though, ICO is essentially more like an IPO, which I mentioned. And this is where it kind of comes into play, where, you know, there is a certain rule for IPOs and what you should do, and, you know, the governing bodies that, you know, you've got to put this value into this. It's all very tangible. It's there. You can see. But with cryptocurrencies and ICOs, it changes so rapidly. And, you know, one day you could make a profit of like $200 billion, and the next day you could lose everything itself. So for a central bank, that is a huge risk to be, you know, to regulate this. So what China's done? Ban it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I honestly think that a lot of people are kind of reacting to this news. You know, ICOs are virtually banned in the US anyway.
Yeah.
You know, they're regulated to a point where no cryptocurrency will really allow US ICO investors. But this doesn't stop any Americans from going out and, you know, owning or buying certain crypto projects or whatever. But, you know, it's at that point, like it's like any other trade or commodity, and, you know, China's a huge market, and if you restrict a market, then its demand is going to go down, and that's what we've seen, of course, with the price of Ethereum and Bitcoin and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think this is just going to be one of those things where, in a few weeks' time, it won't really make any difference anyway, because people in this crypto world will find another way of doing exactly what the ICO has done. They'll just call it something else.
Yeah, or people would understand it better, and then things will change. So Zenon Krepton, he's the director of Shanghai-based financial technology consultancy Krapno Asia. I love his name, by the way. Zenon Krepton.
Zenon, yeah.
Anyways, he said that he suspects that regulators were putting the brakes on ICOs in order to better understand the phenomenon, but it could ease off in the future. He's saying that regulators are globally are struggling to understand what ICOs are, what the risks are, and also how to ring fence and regulate them. China, in many ways, is no different than the US or Singapore in saying that, okay, we need to push back on these for now until we figure how to deal with them. And he says that if he thinks it's going to just be a temporary measure. And yeah, I guess it's just finding out, you know, how these ICOs work. There have been many ICOs that I've came across that just look so dodgy.
They are, Jeff, yeah.
They look really dodgy.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is the thing. With any kind of investment or any kind of speculation or anything that you are choosing to put your money in, do your due diligence. Do your research. Find out whatever you can about these companies.
They generally have white papers for every ICO. So it's normally about 30 to 40 pages long. It's not written in English that you will not understand. It's written in plain, simple English. It's just, you know, take half a day, read it, understand where your money is going to, and just make sure that, you know, any fine prints, read them too, because it's so important that you read your fine prints, because for all you know, they've just stated that if these things fail, the money is still theirs, you can't do anything. And that's generally how ICOs have been throughout, right?
So one of the big things from this China announcement, though, is not only are they banning ICOs, but they've also said that any funds rose or made available via an ICO has to be refunded. Yep. Now, a lot of those people who have invested in ICOs have taken those token and then converted them into cash. What do the Chinese government do about that then?
Yeah.
That's a big question.
Yeah, that's a big question. And again, it just comes down to understanding what ICOs can do for the economy or for the company itself. Is it a huge boost for them? If it's not, if it's too much of a risk, then maybe they should not go. I think maybe for those companies who want to go through, for ICOs, just the first thing you got to do is probably present the white paper to the central bank itself. And then from the central bank, they can then see and put a regulating law on you. Mm-hmm. So it's only specific to you instead. It's a lot of work because you have 65 ICOs in China itself, right? Can you imagine going through, every one of them every week? I think they need a whole new department for this. But yeah. That's where, things need to change. Because if you're still stuck using, using IPOs and it's the only way for a company to, to grow itself, and the only dream for every company is to go public, to be, the number one company in Wall Street Journal or New York Stock Exchange, that shouldn't be the only option, right? I should have many ways of reaching the ultimate goal, which is being, the largest company in the world.
All right. The one thing that I will... Just to clarify, though, is if you are a company and you want to raise you want to start an ICO and you go and speak to a central bank and then they decide whether or not you can do it, it defeats the whole purpose of cryptocurrency.
Of course.
Right? So that's going to be a big issue. If you are interested in this kind of stuff, though, you should probably check out the ICOWatchlist.com. That's ICOWatchlist.com. If you are interested in any of this kind of stuff, have a look over there. You can read the white papers. You can read about the software and all the hardware that's going into the development of these new tokens, these new coins. Like me and Jeff said, this is not advice. Nope. Do everything at your own.
If you do want to get into cryptocurrency, then our Quantum Man here has done a show, Five for Fortune.
Indeed, he has.
That's a new nickname.
Quantum Man, yeah. Everything you need to know, the five things you need to know about
before investing in cryptocurrency.
There you have it.
Yeah. Right.
But then even from the time that I've done that episode to now, there's so much that has changed.
Yeah.
And then there's this stuff and these developments like about ICOs and stuff. It'll be interesting to see how fiat currency first came up and how modern money first came up and compare it to what's happening with cryptocurrency now.
It's very similar because of gold, right? Money was just a value of how much gold have in the reserve, right? Money was used to be a receipt, if I'm not mistaken, right? It was just a receipt that you have this.
Yeah.
Same thing with cryptocurrency as well. I think, it's going to take a shift and it's not going to be in a day. It's not going to be in a year.
No.
It's going to be like 10 years, 20 years, even longer than that. So,
but it will happen.
It looks like it's going to happen. And when it does happen, if it does happen, all these regulating central banks and all, they got to change.
Yeah.
They got to change.
Yeah. All right. It's all big stuff. All big changes happening. Right. We're going to take some a short break. We've got some music from Ocean Colour Scene. When we come back, Arvin will be getting into a combination of AI and Game of Thrones.
Yes.
He's just doing his quantum AI again.
Signs of withdrawal.
indeed. Do get in touch, folks, if you have anything you want to say. We are on Twitter at BFM Radio and, of course, on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Here we go. Ocean Colour Scene, 100 Mile City, BFM 89.9.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. It is Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined by
Jeff Sandhu,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Spoiler alerts, potentially. Some AI has written the finale to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, the final book.
How good is it?
It's bad. It's super, super bad. It cannot write.
Really? You've read the final book for Game of Thrones?
No, the final book is the one that people are waiting for that he hasn't done.
Of course, he's never going to get to it.
He's never going to get to it.
He's busy holidaying in Kuching, apparently.
Yeah. You were just saying with Quentin.
That's a dangerous kind of the final season could be something we don't expect at all.
Yeah.
What does Quentin Tarantino does in the end of his movies?
Right, it was all a dream.
I think what the things that they speak about is I like violence, you like violence, we like to kill off everyone. Yeah. So let's bond over this. In Kuching,
there you go. Where headhunters are from,
if I know we're slightly off topic to but if George R.R. Martin decided to go and meet Quentin Tarantino in Kuching to find out how he can Game of Thrones. Oh. It'll be quite a disaster because if you've seen any Quentin Tarantino movies, at the end of it, it's just blood and splatter and everyone kills each other. Uh-huh. That
sounds like every episode of Game of Thrones.
Every episode.
Well, every episode since season 7, because previously it was just really slow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now it's, you know, everyone can suddenly, you know, teleport and you know,
fast travel.
They've unlocked fast travel. That's exactly the joke, right? Anyway, go back to the story.
So if you know, like anyone listening, if you're like the three of us in the studio, so this is the first time in 7 weeks that we've not had Game of Thrones.
Yes.
It's over. Yes. We don't know when the TV show is coming back. Could be 2019. We don't know when the last book is coming out. The last book is called Winds of Winter, and it's got no signs of finishing anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So what this software engineer did, his name is Zach Tout, he used an algorithm to predict what will happen next, and he got this AI to sort of finish the last book for him.
Share some info? So those who have not watched Game of Thrones
And
season
want to.
7 mm-hmm. and you want to watch mm-hmm. Game of Thrones, switch off now.
Yeah,
because for about the next minute.
And then switch it back on, like
because we'll come back with non-spoiler stuff.
So yeah, 1 minute as of now.
As of now. So what he did was he fed his AI system with which is like a recurrent neural network with 5,000 pages of George R. R. Martin's 5 previous books. So he fed all of the books to it, and he let the AI decide what to do next. Right. Mm-hmm. So according to the AI's predictions, it sort of confirms some long fan theories. Ooh. Because it studied the way the stories go out. It used its algorithm to say, like, Jaime ends up killing Cersei in the end.
That's a big fan theory.
Which is what people have been saying for many, many seasons is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It said that Jon Snow will finally go on a dragon, will ride a dragon.
I see that happening too.
Which is like a given at this point, if you've seen the last episode.
I'm biting my tongue because he kind of is already, but anyway, move on. Mm.
Hey, move on.
Even though... And then Gnosis says that Varys poisons Daenerys in the end, which is weird, which could happen.
Could happen too.
Yeah, sneaky guy.
I wouldn't put it past him yet. Yeah.
But the way the thing writes the books is what doesn't make any sense. So you could pick and choose what you want. But the sentence goes, Jaime killed Cersei and was cold and full of words, and Jon thought he was a wolf now and White Harbor. That's how chapter 5 begins.
So that's how I'd write.
That's how I'd write if I knew how to read.
Right.
So that's how the chapter 5 begins. It has no control over its grammar. It just picks up points here and there, and then it picks up like characters that it knows keep coming back, right? And then it makes its sentences. It also says that there are some unexpected things that happens, like Sansa turns out to be a Baratheon. Oh. It just introduces it. So it's sort of, now what it's doing it is it's connecting houses and characters for no reason.
They introduce a new character as well.
They also introduce someone called Greenbeard, who's a pirate.
It sounds like...
for whatever reason.
Wow.
A pirate called Greenbeard.
Very cool, though.
It
could just be from something from Pirates of the Caribbean.
It could be the Onion Knight's best friend.
So now there's like a crossover potential and stuff.
There you go.
Yeah. So basically how this works is neural networks are a kind of like, it's machine learning, basically. It uses algorithm that is inspired by human behavior and the human brain. You know, it doesn't just memorize, but then and it doesn't just follow instructions, but it actually tries to learn from past experiences. So it takes habits and behavior, and then it tries to predict what's going to happen in the future. And then this one uses something called a recurrent neural network, which is a specific subclass of the neural network. And this one works best when it comes to processing like long sequences of data. So you give it a lot of data, and then like lengthy text, or like in this case, like five whole books, and then it tries to predict what's going to happen in like the sixth book in this specific class. So in theory, like using this, like how this works, it should be able to create like an actual sequel to George R. R. Martin's, you know, book. It should be able to construct its own sentences. But like in the reality and the technology that we have now, it cannot do that because, you know, it doesn't have enough data basically to back it up.
You see, the thing is, right, for with all these AIs and AI can do this and can do that, you know, we do it anyways. Mm-hmm. When we read 5 books... And, you know, we know the 6th book is not out yet. Mm. Once we read all 5, we kind of have our own theories. That's why we have fan theories. Mm-hmm. And what AI is enabled us to do is just to make it really quickly, like really, really fast. Because, you know, for it to read five books, it may just take 5 seconds to read all five books. And then it may take another 5 seconds just to craft up the sixth book. The problem is the grammar and the, and I guess just the, you know, how it arranges the story and how, you know, us humans, we play with that emotions, right? We have that cliffhanger moments during the book. We know when to end something appropriately, or at least good writers know when to end things appropriately. For AI, though, it could be very different unless we humans program this AI to tell it in that certain way, to play with our emotions. So right now, I think this current AI that is doing this recurrent neural network on the Game of Thrones is just to like, I want to know what happens. So just give it to me. That's why the start of the book, immediately it tells you, Jaime kills off Cersei. Mm. Immediately it goes off to what you want. Because I guess the person who's programming this AI is just like, give me the deeds. Yeah. Give me the details, right? Like that, I just want to spoil things for people because that's what people do anyways, right? Mm. So if there is a future for these things, I can so see in the future where you go into a Kinokuniya store and there is a section where it's books written by AI.
By robots.
By robots. Yeah. And a whole section dedicated to them. And those books are just probably a page long because the first, the cover of the book would be like Game of Thrones. And then you first, this person kills that person, this person kills this person, this person kills that person, the end.
That's it.
That is your story.
Because it doesn't know how to pick and choose now. Like, I think one part it even brought back like Ned Stark. Mm. But he died in like the first book or the first season.
He did.
But people keep talking about him. So the AI sort of picks up his name. And then it's like there's one chapter where he's drinking soup or something in this AI's book for whatever reason. Which you can check out. It's actually, you can go to GitHub, GitHub.com. Look for the software engineer's name. I think his name is Zach Thout. Yeah, so that you can look for that. You can read it and see if it makes sense to you.
Yeah.
But basically what he says is there's not enough. We say like 5,000 is a lot of words, but it's actually not enough to prepare the data for this AI to work on. Zach says that the source has to be at least 10 times longer for each book.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So 10,000 pages per book times by 5 books, and then maybe it'll start to make sense.
Okie dokie. Folks, we're going to take a very short break. We've got some music coming up from the Black Keys. It is Run Right Back, followed by U2 with Beautiful Day. We'll be back in just a few minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Before we get started on the final story, the Selangor International Business Summit 2017 welcomes back exhibitors and speakers from hundreds of established brands of the world over. What opportunities will this year's biggest trade event bring to local entrepreneurs and ventures? Find out from Dato Hassan Azhari bin Haji Idris, the Chief Executive Officer of Invest Selangor Berhad. Catch the interview on the marketplace tomorrow at 9:28 a.m. Right, so we like to talk about people like Elon Musk on this show, and we like to talk about Jeff Bezos on this show. You know, the things that they kind of get up to, the lifestyle that they lead. You know, and where they get their money from, where they get their inspiration from, how they live. It kind of,
what goes through their mind?
What goes through their minds?
What do they eat?
Exactly. Or what goes through their belly, in fact.
Oh.
So this is a story about the Silicon Valley executives. Now, as Malaysians, you may all balk at this, who don't eat for days. It's not dieting. It's called biohacking. So over the last 8 months, the former CEO of Evernote and the current CEO of AI Studio, all turtles, they've shunned food for stretches of between 2 and 8 days.
Wow.
Interspersed with similar periods of eating. And so they are saying that this is transformative. There's a mild euphoria. They're in better moods. Their focus is better. And there's a constant supply of energy. They feel a lot healthier. It's helping them become better. These are all quotes. It's helping them become a better CEO. I'm not entirely sure I'm convinced about this. However,
they've lost weight as well. Of course, from not eating.
They've lost
in
a little bit
days.
Of weight. Now, they, a lot of them are kind of using this this intermittent fasting thing called the 5-2 diet. Right? And I spoke to Arvin briefly about this. So this is something that I'm aware of and have kind of participated in over the last couple of years, where you eat normally for 5 days and then you eat a dramatically reduced number of calories over the next 2 days.
So
you eat on the last 2 days, you eat around 500 calories, which, believe me, is not a lot.
Yeah.
And you can, you
one roti chana is like 350 or 400 ringgit.
It's right? About that, yeah. You know, so what they've done is they've taken the idea further and with a focus on performance over weight loss. So they combine fasting with obsessive tracking of vitals, like including your body composition, your blood glucose levels, and ketones. You know, these are compounds produced when the body raids its own fat stores. And a lot of them have been doing this. And they are saying that the idea is, you know, we don't need to follow fancy fads and fancy diets and all this kind of stuff. All you need to do is eat normally for 5 days and lay off a little bit for 2 days. And it will make your body kickstart itself into this kind of... You know.
I think the key word here is eat normally. It doesn't mean like you can just like binge on fast food five days a week. And then roti canai for like every day for breakfast, and then like 2 days you fast and then you're back to normal. I think
eat normal, eat normally, because I think this theory or this, you know, new way of Silicon Valley's executives who are biohacking their body,
right,
is just one way of I guess it's just one way of for them to keep themselves healthy and fit. But if it doesn't work for you, don't do it.
Like, exactly.
How long, you know, we don't really know what is the actual health benefits to this as well. Like, what kind of damage is doing to your liver? What kind of damage is doing to your internal organs, your stomach? And, you know, as it mentions, you know, there are fats that are stored within your body to, you know, it's like an emergency system, for your liver will use that whenever, you know, you're starving for food. It will burn up those fats that you have in your body. And the more times, I guess, you use that process, the more times maybe your kidney again, this is just all assumption, because at the end of the day, I think even for them, these CEOs is assuming that they're like, oh, I feel healthy, I feel better, you know, you would do this 3 years down the road. Let's check back with them again and see how they look.
Didn't work out so well for Steve Jobs, did it?
Yeah, look at him, you know, and like, you know, because again, he had a medical condition and all, right? So, you know, we don't know what triggered it, but at the end, again, just eat normally. Don't binge on, you know, on your roti canai, as Arvind would mention. You know, listen to the quantum man here, you know.
Quantum man. I mean, I will say though, you know, I won't push this idea on people, but I have found myself, since I've started doing it, I've started feeling a lot healthier. You know,
the 5-2 plan.
The 5-2 plan.
So go online, research about it. If it's not for you, not for you.
I will tell you this though: your belly does rumble quite a bit.
Yeah.
But does it say why it works? Like, what's the logic behind?
They put, because like Jeff was saying, it breaks down certain elements of your body, and these ketones then get into your bloodstream, and then they feed your brain.
Yeah,
that's the idea behind it. You have these moments of huge crashes as well, where you're feeling super super tired.
I've had that moment about 4 or 5 months ago, during a very tough time in my family history, and like there was just a period of time where I, you know, there's just no mood of eating, and for like I think good 3 days or 4 days of just no meal at all. And I was just relying on water. You still get the energy of doing things, but it did a lot of damage to me. Like, you know, I've got like gastric problems, acid reflux, and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
You're just getting old, Jeff. That's all it is.
Welcome to my world. I shave every day to look young.
Me too. I had a beard until this morning, funnily enough. Right. It's time for us to wrap up, of course. We've had stories today from...
First, we spoke about damaged undersea cables. So, if you have slow internet connection, it just means that cables underwater are damaged. It'll take about 6 weeks to be fixed.
Just a normal day.
Six weeks. I then spoke about Bumble, which is a dating app that forces women to make the first move. They reportedly turned down a $450 million acquisition offer.
And China banned ICOs or initial coin offerings. So I spoke about what are initial coin offerings and why did China just put a slap on anyone who's doing ICOs.
And then we spoke about how AI is trying to finish the last Game of Thrones book. It's not doing a good job, which tells you why George R. R. Martin is him. And
he's the man.
He's the man.
Back to school with the AI book writing. And of course, then we just finished up with the Silicon Valley execs who don't eat for days. It's not dieting, it's biohacking. It's a good story if you're interested in that kind of stuff. Where did I get that story from? I'll post it up on the website a little bit later on our Facebook page. You might want to have a read about that.
Guardian.
So it is The Guardian, in fact. Thank you, Jeff. Right, coming up after the news then, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. It is Oliver Blaringham, the Vice President for Asia Pacific Subsea 7. So how are oil and gas companies coping with the extended period of volatile oil prices? Oliver Blaringham, the Vice President for Asia of Subsea 7, a subsea engineering and construction services company, spoke about their strategies to weather the uncertainty. That's all coming up after the news at 1 o'clock. On behalf of myself, Arvind Yuvaraj, and Jeff Sandhu, it has been Enterprise Biz Bytes. You are listening to BFM 89.9. We now have a bit of BDI with Millionaire. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, from deepest, darkest Banda Otama. It has been Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.